You're listening to Vatican Radio.
You're listening to Vatican Radio. The Benedict XVI Centre for Religion and Society is a new interdisciplinary endeavour designed to create synergy and explore existing connections among the social sciences and the study of religion. Founded with Vatican approval by St Mary's University Twickenham in the south of England, the centre brings together existing strands of research and seeks to foster new projects in collaboration with external partners, both individual and institutional. The centre's founding ethos is rooted in the ancient vision of Catholic higher education, as enunciated in the Apostolic Constitution Ex Corde Ecclesia of Pope St. John Paul II, on the nature and purpose of the Catholic University in the life of the Church and the world. Among the external affiliates of the Centre is Vatican Radio's Chris Altieri, who spoke with the Centre's founder and director, Dr. Stephen Bullivant, about its efforts to recover the Christian roots of our increasingly secular culture.
Well, the vision for the Centre comes from various streams. Obviously, with the name, Pope Benedict visited St Mary's during the 2010 papal visit to the UK, did several events at St Mary's, and this, the fifth anniversary, seems a very good time to remind ourselves of that honour. And more broadly than that, a lot of my own work, it's involved in theology and particularly the sociology and the social sciences, and has long been impressed long before I was a Catholic, by Pope Benedict's and prior to that Cardinal Ratzinger's engagement with secular thought and particularly the findings of social sciences. So particularly the very famous dialogue with Jürgen Habermas, the dialogue with Marcello Pera, and the call for a courtyard of the Gentiles. So internally at St Mary's, the purpose of the centre is to draw together various strands of work that's already going on, work in the sociology of kind of non-religiosity and atheism, work in the new evangelization, work to do with Catholic social teaching. Some of my colleagues are quite eminent economists with a particular interest in this area. And also some of the work that goes on at the university in terms of bioethics, and a particular project we've got on at the moment looking towards the 50th anniversary of Humana Vitae in 2018, that's in partnership with Ave Maria University in Florida.
That's a very full plate and a pretty broad billet. St. Mary's itself, though, is a place that was founded sort of with the idea of recovering and actuating the Catholic intellectual ethos, and you're across the university, you've been working to bring that into the 21st century. Can you give us a bit of a progress report on the university then?
Yeah, well, I mean, St. Mary's was founded in 1850, which, as I'm sure you know, was the year that the hierarchy was restored to Great Britain. Now, one of the very first things they did, and I'm sure they had a lot on that year, was to found a teacher training college to teach the children of poor Catholic immigrants in, you know, the large industrial towns, particularly in the Northwest, Manchester, Liverpool, and beyond. And so for most of its history, it's been very heavily involved in teacher training, as indeed it still is. But over the course of that 165 years, it's, like many such institutions, it expanded into various other areas. It received full university status last year, 2014. My own work fits very strongly with the engagement of the Catholic intellectual tradition with what is a very and increasingly secular culture in Great Britain. Another recent centre is the Bakita Centre for Human Trafficking, that is in partnership with the Home Office and the Bishops' Conference. So there's, across the university, and it's not a large university, it's about 6,000 students, it's growing, there's a strong engagement with that history that St Mary's has always had of responding in a Catholic way to the social needs of the day.
We're both teachers as well, and I have to say that one of the things that I found most frustrating in my own experience in the classroom is to see students who are very, very bright and who have very, very serious questions, but very little idea how to formulate them, or that the very real struggles, the intellectual and spiritual struggles that they're having, have actually been dealt with, and that we don't need to reinvent the wheel. That is a failure, frankly, I think, on the part of our broader culture. But to the extent that the church is in the culture, it's something for which we bear some responsibility. And I'm wondering, what do you think we can do better on that point?
I think certainly one of the issues that we have in the Catholic and the more broadly Christian culture in Britain is we haven't had significant catechesis for a long time. And so even those within society who are quite committed to their faith within several denominations don't know how to articulate that. And so when that gets kind of, you know, taken up to the broader cultural level, there's not the voice sustained by a proper rooting in the Christian tradition that's coming through in public debate. And that's the same thing that, you know, the same issues that in the public debate is the same thing that's happening in pubs across the land. I mean, you know, there's all that stuff in the Brothers Karamazov about how Russia, you can't go into pubs without young people discussing, you know, the big questions. And it's still the case, but we're not equipping young people as a country to be able to tap into exactly what you say, that the resources that Western culture has had for centuries, many of them Christian-based, for engaging with those in a nuanced way.
I'm thinking also then more specifically now about the Benedict XVI Center, because one of the things, and you mentioned this when you were talking about your admiration for Joseph Ratzinger and Benedict VI, who became Benedict XVI, his dialogue with Habermas, his dialogue with Pera, who are just two sort of household names of dozens and probably hundreds of interlocutors that he had among the intellectual elite, if I can use that term descriptively and not polemically, who don't share his presuppositions. Nope. And he always had this amazing ability and still does and hopefully will stay with us for a while to keep teaching us about it. But how do we go about, can you share with us a success story maybe about dialoguing genuinely and productively with people who don't share our presuppositions?
Well, the most obvious success story, I suppose, if you want to call it that, is my own personal journey. I was raised as an unbaptized atheist in kind of a what is still, you know, there's vestigial Christianity just growing up in Britain. There's plenty of churches knocking around. It's still the law that even state schools have to have a daily act of worship. But by the time I got to high school and sort of the last few years of high school going to university, I was certainly an atheist. And I went to university. I went to Oxford to study classical archaeology. And a few weeks in, wasn't enjoying it as I thought I would, and then wanted to do philosophy. Now, you can't do philosophy on its own at Oxford. You have to do it with medicine or maths or politics and economics. And the only thing I was kind of qualified to do it with was with theology. And I had no particular interest in doing it with theology. But if that was what I had to do to study philosophy, then I'd, you know, do the maximum philosophy, the minimum theology. But it was always a theology that interested me. It was always particularly the early church fathers. But that grand philosophical tradition, which even just studying philosophy, you don't have to go back too many centuries to get very much into a Christian culture that's informing that world. And so, cut a very long story short, and you know, it's not a purely intellectual journey by any means. My own studies, my own kind of grapplings with the Western intellectual tradition, I suppose, led me to a master's on the Catholic engagement with atheism, Vatican II, which became a doctorate. And then by the time I'd come to the end of the doctorate, I'd been received into the church in Rome at St. Paul's Outside the Walls, and I've not looked back since. So that's hardly a scalable strategy for engaging secular Western people and at least interesting them, because the first thing for me was to stop regarding it all as nonsense and to see that there was something there that was worth engaging with. And I think we see that a lot of the, at least the kind of the louder secular voices, at least sort of in the past 10 years, Britain, America, Italy too, there's been a push to dismiss even religious questions as worth our time, worth if there's any kind of substance there to even bother disagreeing with.
You're listening to Vatican Radio.